I'd like to share a brief reading for you from the words of Rumi. Work. Keep digging your well. Don't think about getting off from work. Water is there somewhere. Submit to a daily practice. Your loyalty to that is a ring on the door. Keep knocking, and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there. You know, we often inquire about each other's physical health, but rarely do we ask about their spiritual health. Perhaps it seems too personal or too overtly religious, maybe even too presumptuous. Perhaps as rational Unitarian Universalists, you don't put much stock in this idea of spiritual life. You may see this church as grounded in hard reality, in a place of action and of ethical and moral discussion and learning. And true, that is part of who we are. But if Rebecca Parker is right in those opening words I shared with you, that's not the primary thing people are looking for when they come through our doors. And I suspect that down deep, it's really not the primary thing any of you are looking for from a church. She says we come looking for a wellspring of refreshing waters, for a path of compassion and service, for a song of overflowing joy, and a prayer too deep for words. You know, our church is a place where connections of many different kinds are made. Here we build incredible connections with each other and we create a strong community of support and caring. We also connect beyond these walls too, as well as we give moral and ethical voice to the issues of our time and as we reach out in service and in love across difference to help others. In the upcoming Sundays, we'll be exploring lots of those connections. But there's another kind of connection we foster and develop here. A connection that I think is really the foundation upon which the other connections rest. It is your connection to your spiritual self. As a church, we're here to help you find and connect to that wellspring of refreshing water, help you find that path of compassion. We're here to invite you to a journey inward, to experience the song of overflowing joy and that prayer too deep for words. You know, the late Unitarian Universalist Harry Schofield, who supervised and mentored many student ministers, would ask them regularly, how is your devotional life? How is your spiritual practice? And they would often begin by explaining how busy they were working on their studies or this project at the church or that project, and eventually would say something like, well, I don't really have a regular practice or whatever. And he would reply to them, if you don't have a spiritual practice, you will dry up and blow away. Think how different that image is from Rebecca Parker's image of a wellspring of refreshing water. It's a healthy spiritual life that can move us from the experience of being dried up and ready to blow away to the experience of overflowing with wellsprings of living water. In a great conversation I had with Dave Stollard this week, one of our newer members at the church, he reminded me about a quotation from Schiller that's carved in the stone in one of the buildings at Harvard. It says, and forgive my German, Es ist der Geist, der sich den Körper baut. It's the spirit that builds the body. Now that quote can certainly have different shades of meaning, but it reminds me that our physical health is very much connected to our spiritual health. As we get older, we particularly notice that good physical health is not something that just happens. We need to eat right and get exercise on a regular basis. And the same is true for our spiritual health. A healthy spiritual life does not just happen. It must be nurtured and developed. It requires an intentional practice to truly develop the kind of spiritual life that will sustain us over the long haul, especially in the difficult times. Practice is the key word here. And that practice takes time, commitment, even trial and error. I love that bit of advice from Rumi that I shared with you in the reading. Work, keep digging your well. Don't think about getting off from work. Water is there somewhere. Submit to a daily practice. Your loyalty to that is the ring on the door. Keep knocking, and joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there. You know, this week, I just happened to catch President Obama making a speech at the National Prayer Breakfast. And in that speech, he said, I wake up each morning and I say a brief prayer and I spend a little time in scripture and devotion. You know, I thought to myself, wow, with all that's waiting for him when he steps out of bed, he takes time for spiritual life. You know, as some of you know, I'm very much a doing person who makes his list of things to accomplish every day. And I'm sure it's not anywhere like the issues on the list of a president of the United States. But I wake up in the morning already working in my head on the next project. Taking time for regular spiritual practice was not something that came naturally to me, and some days it still doesn't. But many years ago, words from C.S. Lewis spoke to me, and I think they were really the beginning of my spiritual practice. He wrote, "The moment you wake up each morning, all your wishes and hopes for that day rush into you like a wild animal. And the first job each morning consists of shoving it all back and listening to the other voice, taking the other point of view, letting the other, stronger, quieter life come flowing in." Of course, the next question becomes, how do you do that? And you know, that is the question that religions from both the East and the West have explored for thousands of years. Buddhists and other Eastern traditions offer the practice of many different forms of meditation. In a classic Zen meditation, we focus on a word or a sound to help us empty our mind of distraction. We let go of all that is pressing in on us in order to better see what really is. And there are also guided meditation practices, such as the loving kindness meditation, where we focus our minds on an ever-expanding circle of human connections, from ourselves out to total strangers, even to our enemies, holding wishes of love and kindness for them all. Both these practices are, in fact, part of the programs at our church. And if you need help in developing a meditation practice, you should come to the meditation group that meets on Wednesday night here. I know that Jack Zettler and Carolyn would be happy to help introduce you to that practice, those practices. Many of the spiritual practices of Western religions are what are called mediated practices, meaning a spiritual practice where there's something upon which we focus. Words, scripture, prayers, poetry, proverbs, or a physical object like an icon or a painting. It is this something that carries us to a particular place. And it's through intense engagement, by planting words in our heart or images in our mind, that we are transported to a place of greater meaning and understanding. This practice can be misunderstood as icon worship or be attached to a particular dogma or theology, but that's really not the case. Rightly understood, the words or the image are not ends in themselves, but vehicles that open us up to our deeper selves. By the way, that's very much true for Hinduism as well. You know, we have a Vesper service here each month. It's a beautiful spiritual practice, and I invite you to come to that. In that service, the lights are dim, and after we share and readings and music and thoughts, there's a time of silence. And in that 5 minutes or so, I often look into the flame of our chalice dancing in the beauty of the darkened room. And that visual image transports me to a much deeper place. For some, one practice works better than the other, and there are many of us who benefit from a variety of approaches. Personally, although meditation, particularly guided meditation, is part of my spiritual practice, mediated spiritual practice works best for me. Over the years, I have collected poems and passages from Scripture, even just little sayings. I seem to need to hold on to words to go deeper. And those words somehow open me up to the better part of myself. They keep me from becoming overwhelmed and help me to stay the course. Some of the passages from Scripture or poems or saying have become such a part of me that they now just come forward when I need them and allow me to appreciate whatever I'm encountering at that moment in a deeper way. Some of those words now simply live in me. They give me strength to move forward and hope that things will work out, and they remind me that of who I am and all that I'm connected to. They put me back in balance and give me insight and peace of mind. For example, when I have to face something that I really don't want to, a famous poem of Rumi, the first few lines, just comes into my mind. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. I tend to be a worrier by nature, and almost every morning I need these words from the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel of Matthew, which Jesus teaches. Do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink. Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. And I want you to know, in every week when I write a sermon, and every Sunday before I preach it, I pray the words of Psalm 19. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in thy sight, O God, my rock and my redeemer. They're very traditional theological words, and I don't really mean them literally, but I do mean them. They've been said by preachers for thousands of years who hoped that they would have the courage and the strength and the wisdom and the compassion to say the right thing, to say something that would touch someone's heart or bring someone comfort or give encouragement or insight or inspiration to people to do the works of love and justice. These words remind me that it's not about me, or is it about preaching to please some person in the pews, but it's about speaking words that are pleasing in the sight of love and truth and justice. It's also been a privilege for me to witness how other people are sustained and connected by the words that they have made part of themselves, particularly in difficult times. I've witnessed this miracle even among our seniors who come to the senior lunch. We've had one person who's in particular advanced state of Alzheimer's. And what I've noticed with her and others was even when they could no longer speak with you, they could still sing a Christmas carol with you or recite the 23rd Psalm with you. Many of you know that I cared for a person with Alzheimer's for many years, and I was grateful that he had a rich spiritual life until the end. Uncle T was a Christian Scientist, and for as long as he could, he read the prescribed daily readings. But as his mind began to slip, it got difficult to find all the appointed readings for that day. So he would just announce every day that the reading for the day was the 23rd Psalm, and he would recite it, and it would give him profound comfort every day. I've told you part of the story about him that I'm going to tell now before, but there's more to it, and it felt a need that it be in this sermon. Just about 2 years before Uncle T died, when his health had declined to the point that he could no longer live with us, Malcolm and I went about finding the right place for him. We found a beautiful place, but they required a test of his memory and mental abilities, where he needed to demonstrate that he could function at a certain basic level. He got the question about the President of the United States wrong, along with several others, and he was becoming nervous and agitated. Then the examiner said, I have to ask you to write one sentence, It can be any sentence about anything that comes into your head, but it has to be a complete sentence. He looked at us, and a calmness came over him, and he wrote without hesitation a three-word sentence, God is love. He put the pencil down and said, how's that? Now, I knew where those words came from. They were on a little plaque in his room that he read all the time, and they were just part of him. Tears came to the eyes of the woman who was giving the test, and she let him move right into the place. But the story goes on. And Uncle T continued to decline physically, and one July day I got a call that he had calmly said to a nurse that he was going to die now. They helped him to bed, and he was not looking good, so they called me, and I went right over. And by the time I got there, he was already dead. And I went into his room, and there was a serene look on his face, and sitting beside the bedside on his nightstand was something that I had not seen in a while. It was the little plaque with the words, God is love, right beside him. I'm sure that was his last thought. So I ask you, have you ever wondered what words will be there for you in your last days? I can tell you, they will be the words that you have planted in your heart. We all experience difficulties in our lives. Most of us have lots of stress. We rush through the demands of each day on the surface with little thought, little appreciation, even perhaps not much clarity of purpose. Most of us yearn for something more, something deeper, something that will help us put things in perspective, something that will just give us a little relief from the pressure. Yes, there are good therapists, and thank goodness for them. And there are great vacations, and they're great too. But it takes more than that to keep the soul in good health. I'm no guru. My life gets crazy, and even though I know better, I will neglect my spiritual practice. At times I get impatient, lose focus, feel exhausted and scattered in all directions. And it's then that I know that I have to get back to my practice, not just for a few minutes each morning, but living those words and those poems in ways that they are really ready for me when I need them. I know that when I do, I feel totally different. I'm touched at the center of my being, and there's an openness and a fullness that comes to me. In the words of that 23rd Psalm I heard every day, my cup runneth over. I feel the refreshing waters that Rebecca Parker spoke of building up inside me and really flowing through me like a river. And when I'm in this place, that I have so much more to bring to others, I'm acting from an inner depth, from my very soul, I think. And then it feels to me like a river running through me. This sermon is an invitation to you to find the river in you. You know, Rumi wrote another poem, which is that invitation, and I'll read a passage of it. He wrote, come take a pickaxe and break apart your stony matrix. The heart's matrix is glutted with rubies, and springs of laughter are buried in your breast. Unstop the wine jar. Batter down the door to the treasury. The water in your jug is brackish and low. Smash the jug and come to the river. That river is inside every one of us. There is a heart that's glutted with treasures as valuable as rubies in every one of us. Yet the demands of our everyday lives so often leave us feeling drained, the water of our spirit brackish. It is a spiritual practice that can help to break open our closed hearts and lead us to experience that river that is flowing in our souls.